Welcome to the show. It is action aficionado and giant fan, Mark Saber. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me again. It's a fun time.
Totally a fun time. Yeah. So, what was your introduction to Hong Kong cinema?
Well, like we talked about on the Bruce Lee episode, it was through Bruce Lee's films originally. So you could kind of say he's the
Godfather of it all. Yeah.
The first real Hong Kong badass in films, at least, I'd say. I mean, Jimmy Wong Yu, you could say as well, but I mean, he just didn't have the charisma as Bruce did, and, you know, no offense to him, but I mean, he had some good movies too, but, you know, Bruce Lee had that ultimate badass.
Ride or die kind of attitude. It's like, here we are.
Yeah, you know, like, don't fuck with me kind of, you know, it really came across.
You can't curse on this. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know.
It's just so wild too. It's like they know how to express themselves without saying very little, and yet again, yeah, the people who don't get it just take the action. The people who do get it are just blown away. It's like, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I actually used this as an example years and years ago. I was taking some class in communications, and for whatever reason, they wanted us to give a presentation on, like, nonverbal communication. So being obsessed with the films as I am, I played a clip from The Way of the Dragon where Bruce Lee's character, you know, he couldn't speak English in the film, so he had to kind of communicate through body language a lot. And there was, like, that classic scene. It was even referenced in Kung Fu Hustle, where he's like telling that Italian mob boss, like, I mean, basically, like, don't fuck with me, you know, like he points to everybody, like, Nora Miao behind him, and, you know, points
always
at him,
be
like,
watching you.
Basically, like, you, yeah, them guys back there, you don't touch them. Otherwise, and then he, like, clenches his fists, you know, I'm going to fuck you up, you know. So.
And just how do you, you know, stand your ground, you know, and it's not easy. And dealing with, again, the town bully concept and very little of the racism that the studios were trying to insert made it through, you know. There was a great podcast, Give Me Back My Action Horror Movies. You know, shout out to Charlie Chase here. And he did a good job or something. I was like, there's only like a few of them scenes in those movies that don't sit well. Like, there's a few henchmen with the buck teeth. And it's like, well, okay. Someone was going to insert that one way or the other. That sucks. But for the most part, I mean, pretty strong, like, pretty progressive cast, really, pretty well done.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Chuck Norris in the film, and I think that was his first real big film role, actually. I mean, he'd been a world champion at that time, so. I mean, we could cover all Bruce Lee's films again, but I mean. Pretty much covered them all last time. Again. Whatever you want to talk about.
No, it's fine. So I was going to go more into just like the post Benny Chan, Ringo Lam, and you know, John Woo and Sai Hark era. You know, are just the masters of coming together with some action and crime, and sometimes even sci-fi horror elements and movies that, you know, just had very explosive gunplay and very creative fight scenes and superstars.
You mentioned Choi Hawk. I was thinking about his stuff the other day. Double Team, you know, he was his American debut. And at that time, you know, when I first saw that film, I didn't know who he was. That was when I was just at my kind of entry level in the Hong Kong cinema. Of course, I knew John Woo, but, you know, but a lot of the other directors, I wasn't familiar with yet, other than like Stanley Tong and, you know, one or two others, but mostly just a few of the main film stars like Jackie and Jet Li and Chow Yun-fat and those guys. So, but, you know, I used to, because I was a huge fan of action films from anywhere, right? I mean, pretty much Hong Kong and Hollywood, you know, top two creators, at least in the 90s of, you know, action films. So, of course, Double Team, you know, I was looking forward to it. I bought the VHS. I used to be a huge fan of the NBA back in the 90s. So I thought it was really cool. Okay, Dennis Rodman's in it. So, and definitely, I was always a fan of Van Damme. So, nice. Unfortunately, that was kind of the start of his career downfall that he experienced at that time. Luckily, he was able to bounce back. But, you know, just the style of that film, I watched it again like last summer. And, you know, it's kind of different looking at it or watching it as a Van Damme movie. Or once you become familiar with, you know, like Choi Hawk's style, then you can watch it as a Choi Hawk film and then, you know, kind of get more out of it. Of course, it's a silly film, very campy, as you might say, just like the scenes with Van Damme and Rodman and like their little disguises or whatever in when they're in like Rome and all that stuff.
It's a wacky movie, that's for sure.
With those monks, Dennis Rodman throwing the skull and making basketball puns and stuff. I mean, but you know, the action, Sammo Hung actually worked on some of that. Mickey Rourke was like all like buff, weirdly buff for that movie. And
He was still boxing at that time.
The Tiger, but you know, it was really Choi Hawk's camera that made the action really kind of a unique, just different things. I mean, especially if you look at the other film he did with Van Damme, Knock Off, where, that one I saw in the theater and then when I saw it, I thought, oh, that was crap. But looking back and watching it again and again and again, coming from the perspective of, okay, now I know who this director is. I know his style.
Why you like him, what you don't dig. You know? So, yeah, it's just you read him. I mean, it's the same thing with reading John Woo through Hard Target. You know, it's like, okay, the good in that movie comes through even with the shit that doesn't work, like the Cajun accent and the utter distracting townsfolk.
I love Hard Target. I mean, that's definitely up on my, you know, more top of the list of my favorites, but ultimately, I got to say, The Killer was the ultimate John Woo film.
I like it. I feel like the first half's a little too predictable by today's standards. You know who's going to get shot and killed, but the last part is just so much emotional, you know, bloodshed and just seeing these guys who have nothing in common, you know, a police inspector and a hitman working together. Wow.
Yeah. You know, and that's what, you know, John Woo, you could say to a certain extent, he was probably the ultimate director of, you know, at least characters that you might call Hong Kong badasses, right? I mean, that's kind of a broad statement, but especially Chow Yun-fat, I mean, Hard Boiled, and even his American films where you got a lot of those films had like two sides of the same coin, like, you know, people, obviously Face Off. I mean, that one really took it to a new level with Travolta and Cage actually switching faces. And, you know, I mean, that was just such a cool film.
Every movie star is virtually doing kung fu or explosive gunplay at this and helping popularize it even more.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's hard to say. Ultimately, I'd say Face Off was Wu's best Hollywood film, followed very closely by Hard Target. And again, The Killer,
that was Broken Arrow, but I totally understand.
Oh, no, you know, I really love Broken Arrow too. A lot of people kind of, when you're reading about John Woo's films, a lot of people kind of shit on Broken Arrow a little bit, and I can see why, because it's doesn't have a whole lot of John Woo's style in it. I mean, it's
paycheck. It's just like totally what it is. It's paycheck.
But it's still I mean, it's such a cool film. It's such a great action film, I think. Like, that was one of those films where I remember on IMDb, they said, you know, Wu's cut came in at X amount of length and they had to trim violence. Obviously, we all know about Hard Target in that scenario. But
Sam Raimi told the studio to leave him alone, and yet the studio still fucked with it.
Yeah, I think he had to submit it like 7 or 8 times.
For the the ratings, and people just aren't understanding. It's like, you know what you signed up for. You've seen worse in a Stallone movie. It's like, it's
just... Yeah. But I think, I mean, I read a book several years ago, and I think John was quoted in the book as saying, you know, he wanted to prove to the critics in Hollywood that, hey, you know, he can make an American movie just as well as anybody. And I think he proved it with Broken Arrow.
Totally. It gets shot on also, but I really dig Blackjack, the USA Network TV pilot that he did with Dolph Lundgren. Because that was just his attempt at basically doing a, for lack of a better word, just, I would have seen it, you know, Once a Thief was already a hit, and that just did not get enough discussion.
Yeah, the remake, he like made the remake for the, I guess it was a Canadian TV series, so it was supposed to be what, like a pilot episode, but it was kind of like a movie as well. And then from what I understand, Blackjack was supposed to be the same kind of deal, but then they never made a TV series out of it for whatever reason. But I thought it was a lot better actually than the Once a Thief TV movie that he did. Mm-hmm.
And there's just something to be said for, again, right place, right time, right energy. And unfortunately, it just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember Mission Impossible, the first film, right? And
same kind of transition.
I remember at the time, you know, thinking it was going to be like GoldenEye or something like that, where it was just action packed. Of course, at the time I was only, you know, 11 or 12, but I was kind of disappointed with it as a kid. Looking back, it's a pretty cool film. But when Mission Impossible 2 came out, okay, it's directed by John Woo. I knew who he was. I loved his films already. And I was like, when I saw it in the theater, I was like thinking like, okay, you know, this is what I was hoping for with the first one. But looking back, MI2, I got to say, you know, like the first kind of half of the film is a little bit too slow paced, I think. Mm-hmm. But and I wouldn't call it the best film of the Mission Impossible series, but it still has the best action. You know, that as soon as they get that gunfight going.
I know many. That was their intro to John Woo. They had seen like parts of Hard Target or Broken Arrow, but you know, he just was, by the time he's in Face Off, and now they know who he is.
Yeah, I think like Face Off and MI2 were probably, I mean, I'm sure they were his biggest box office hits. Probably Mission Impossible 2 would probably be number one given the franchise and the PG-13 rating and all that. And, you know, there was like that whole rumor too about that film where they said, oh, okay, Woo made a 3-hour cut and it was going to be R-rated and this and that. I actually shot a question over to Terrence Chang about that, who had produced, you know, obviously he was Wu's production partner for long time. And he pretty much indicated that, you know, John Woo knew from the get-go that MI2 would be PG-13, so I'm not entirely sure if this rumored R-rated cut of it really exists or not.
I think it's just left in the vault at that point.
yeah.
What you see is as good as you're gonna get, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I mean, for a PG-13, I mean, it definitely had, especially, you know, the shootout in the lab and then the whole finale with the motorcycle chases and all that going on. I mean,
Hans Zimmer has a good score, and he's even reused portions of that. And I mean, it even brings us back into that one Hong Kong director who did the big hit.
Oh, Chris Wong. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like everyone was hot for a minute and just trying their best and given the circumstances. But yeah, there are times where it's like, yeah, I mean, some of it just isn't as good. And so I just always go back to even just classic John Woo, because like Red Cliff just can't, you know, his attempt at a dynasty epic just can't touch, you know, again, The Killer or Hard Boiled. It just,
right.
It is
exactly
fun.
I mean, Woo with, and I really love Red Cliff, especially like the first one. Mm-hmm. I know they split into two parts essentially, but almost every one of John Woo's films I have enjoyed to a certain degree. I thought Manhunt was a big disappointment, but I also drove all the way to Toronto Film Festival to see it.
Yeah.
So that probably was part of my disappointment, but it did have, you know, looking back, like the shootout at that ranch or whatever, like kind of in the middle, that was, you know, pretty good, but not like up to Woo's standards. I mean, I noticed he used I think he shot in a video and it looked, digitally, and it looked like CGI was used in some of mm-hmm. the gun special effects and whatnot. So
yeah, it was awkward. Yeah.
It didn't have that authentic Woo feeling to it, but it still had a little bit of his style left. So, you know, I still bought the Blu-ray.
Oh, good. I mean, you're going to do it anyway if you're a huge fan of the person. Like, you're going to buy even the movies that you don't care for by Scorsese or Spielberg just to reanalyze it or hear them talk about it. And sometimes that's just okay. And it's like, yeah, I want to know why I like what I like.
Yeah. And, you know, while we're on the subject of John Woo, I finally got around, well, this is probably, it was the same year Manhunt came out, 2017. I had never seen The Crossing that he'd done, that other two-part epic that was split into two films.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually really enjoyed the first one. It had like quite a bit of action in it, like, you know, battle scenes, kind of like Windtalkers had, but and still, I mean,
I think that's the one, Red Cliff.
Well, this was a different one. This was like, it was about the sinking of this ship.
Okay, so I'm not familiar with this one.
it was never released in the United States. I don't even think it got a Hong Kong home video release.
Was it political or something?
Well, it probably had a little bit of politics in it. You can't avoid that anymore with like working.
No, especially
China.
If it's a war movie, you're gonna have moments like that. But that's wild.
It was more of like a love story, really. I mean, I only watched one time. I watched both parts, but I definitely have to revisit at least the first part, because I mean, it had some, you know, good war scenes in it.
Nice.
And anytime you give John Woo guns in his films, you know,
you're down.
yeah, exactly. So.
So with Ringo Lam, you know, so I was introduced to him through Full Alert and just a bunch of other he and Benny Chan and just a lot the guys who did Infernal Affairs and Young and Dangerous, you know, it's like just I instantly recognized their name and I'm like, ah, I know this means some serious business, you know, whatever it is. And fun fact, just Ringo, you know, he's another one. He worked twice with Van Damme. He did Maximum Risk. And it's a noir film all in through. And like, you don't even recognize Van Damme. You're like, you forget you're watching a Van Damme movie half the time. It's just his usual kind of mysterious action crime drama.
Yeah.
Some mystery. And then you get to that one where he's like a serial killer or something. It's like, it was direct to video in some areas, and then theatrical
Replicant,
others.
Right?
Replicant, that's the one, yeah. And so it is just cool seeing which ones can actually really get along really well with international casts, which ones don't really cut the mustard, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think any of these guys could have succeeded in Hollywood, in my opinion. Obviously, John Woo had the most success out of the directors, you know, and I'd say definitely Jackie Chan and Jet Li out of any of the, you know, movie stars.
Totally. Especially with War and, you know, just some of those other movies, like, you know, Shanghai Nights is like, okay, so by this point, you're getting to see them do throwbacks to what hardcore fans know them for.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Donnie Yen obviously was in a few Hollywood movies, but kind of playing
other than
secondary role
in Rogue One. Like, he doesn't fare too well in Shanghai Nights. And
yeah.
There's a few others he's in. Like, Blade 2, he choreographed the fights, but that's the one that where he just said, the hell with you, Hollywood, because they would not let him do what he was trying to do. So,
yeah, well, I mean, that's actually a blessing, because he went back. I read an interview or something from him a long time ago where Tony Jaa had just burst on the scene with Ong Bak, and, you know, it kind of floored everybody, and Donnie Yen said, hey, you know, we can't let Thailand take the crown, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, so I think that's kind of what inspired him to make SPL. And then, I mean, from there on, I mean, his career just hit overdrive. And, you know, if you didn't consider him a superstar before Ip Man, then certainly once that film hit, then there was no question left. But
I'd say he's been...
regardless of any people that don't like him, I think he's been the ultimate Hong Kong badass of the last, you know, couple decades. So,
well, Mike Scott from Atkins on Dispute and Action for Everyone, I think, summed it up well. And this is eye-opening to me. I had no idea. Apparently, he just had a huge ego back in the day. But I think he
That's
work.
What I've heard. I think, you know, I've never met the man.
Wan Wu Ping and him had a falling out, and I had no idea. I thought they just... You know, they went where the wind blew, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like, because, I mean, from what I gathered, it sounds like, you know, first of all, it sounds like whatever the issue was, and I've never met him, so I can't say, but I think he's, from everything I gather, I think he's, like, really, like, kind of cooled down these days, you know, maybe he's more chill, so...
You would hope, you know?
Yeah. And I think he and Yuen Wao Ping even possibly reconnected, because they...
I think they did. Think
he did that Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sequel. The English language one that Michelle Yeoh was in. And then it... I don't know. It was okay. It was like... I think it was just only on Netflix. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I couldn't get into that one, but it wasn't against them. It was just... the way it was filmed and over CGI'd and just not remarkable story wise, but I can't blame them for wanting to reconnect with that. You know, it's just a giant ass hit, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I forgot, of course, Yuen Wao Ping did, Ip Man 3 and 4 choreography.
Yeah.
Taking over from Sammo Hung, which I don't know why they switched them up, but maybe Sammo had health problems or something.
I hope not. That'd be bad.
Yeah. I know. I remember when they were doing Ip Man 2, he had some kind of like a heart surgery or something, but he still filmed the fight. So mm-hmm. Sammo Hung is definitely one of the ultimate Hong Kong badasses.
1,000%. And so... it seems like a lot of them are now just showing up in just small bad guy roles. You think that's just as good as they're going to get? They got to be like a supporting character who kicks ass in one scene. Like Veronica Ngo is another one, and she showed up in like Star Wars The Last Jedi, and I think her co-star did as well. It's just like, okay, interesting. But it's even more annoying because it's like they use them, but then they don't. It's like they make them part of the cast, but then they don't actually get to see them use what they can do. And they just have them sitting at a desk, like Michelle Yeoh in, you know, just what's it called? You know, Crazy Rich Asians and what have you. It's like that's not even remotely close. And, to the Michelle Yeoh we all know, you know, which is on James Bond and Twin Warriors and The Line of Duty.
Yeah. I think, you know, Michelle Yeoh, I think she's a good actress too. So, I mean, I would assume given, you know, she's not in her 20s anymore, maybe she wanted to do more like stuff that didn't have action, but it's always a treat when she comes back and still does another action film like the spin-off Master Z, the Ip Man Legacy.
Yeah.
And that's another guy right there, the lead actor, Zhang Jin. Sometimes he uses the English name Max.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that guy too. I mean, I think he's, for a while, he seemed to be positioning himself as the next big Hong Kong badass, you know, but...
Yeah, with Wolf Warrior and all those, he's been here and there. And same thing with, I mean, I talked about this earlier, like, Scott Atkins seems to break into all these international productions. Same thing with Frank Grillo, and yet it's like the talent's there, but are the investors? Are they only investing in you because you were part of an ensemble versus they actually want to work with you? It can get pretty political there, you know?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when you check out all the forums and stuff, I mean, to me it sounds like people still really, I think they really like Scott Adkins and his
he has an unreal following that, you know, just no one else seems to have mastered.
He definitely has a lot of talent when you see him on screen. I think they should stop making him, assuming that somebody's making him do it. But when he plays like American characters and like faking the accent, I mean.
Just be you, man.
Yeah, but I understand. I mean, sometimes, like, it was Hard Target 2, which was not good.
But, like a Southern accent or some shit like that. Yeah,
you know, it was like a fake sequel, basically. Like, I don't understand why they do that. Going back to films that are that old and then doing this, I guess you could say, a sequel in name only, but it's direct to video.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's already what Undisputed was, so I understand why he kind of became part of that whole scene too. And some of it is, again, yeah, just where the industry's going, and some of it is just, well, you know, that's currently what's paying at the moment, and you can make it your own. I mean, it's kind of like how Michael J. White made Never Back Down his own franchise. I'm not a fan of that whole thing, but I can't blame him for saying, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do with this in name only sequel, just like with Undisputed, you know?
Yeah. And that's cool too. If you really like look at all of those,
they made their own career.
And a lot of them,
a while.
Yeah. And a lot of those guys, you know, did work on some Hong Kong films back in the day. Obviously, mm-hmm. Scott Adkins. Michael Jai White was actually in one called, it was Silver Hawk. It was Michelle Yeoh, like a superhero movie. It wasn't very good, but...
Yeah, I can get in that one. But yeah, that and one of the Gen X Cops movies, and then unknown guy known as Paul Rudd.
Yeah, Paul Rudd. I mean, you got obviously Chuck Norris back in the day, and technically you could say Van Damme with Knock Off. I mean, it was pretty much a co-production from what I understand. So let's see who else. Well, he wasn't in the movie, but Steven Seagal was a producer on this film called Dragon Squad.
Yeah, that was really good. I was really blown away by it.
the gunplay was really cool. Sammo Hung was in it, Maggie Q.
Michael, she was a badass. Yeah.
Michael Biehn, you know, another Hollywood actor popping up.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. I was like, I mentioned it, and only certain people at school knew what I was talking about. Like, you've never seen this? What's it called? It's called Dragon Eyes, or not Dragon, Dragon Squad. I've never heard of it. Why is it Steven Seagal's involved? He's just a producer.
Simon Yum was good. In it too, and you know,
he is the go-to. You need a police captain, you need a gangster, you need just a traitor. He's so great. And did you ever see Contract Killer, also known as Hitman, with Jet Li?
Oh yeah, I saw that one.
I was just so twisted out. He's tracking him, and then he reveals he's the vigilante who he's been mistaken for. But he just sells it. He's like, he instantly just says it, and even though it's all subtitled and everything, you buy it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, what's cool is kind of sitting down. I mean, once you watch so many films, I mean, you know, when I first started watching Hong Kong films that were in Cantonese with subtitles, obviously I didn't know the language, but over time I was able to pick up, you know, a decent amount of it, I would say. I mean, I can't claim to be
video stores and what have you. Yeah, just keep
it. I can't claim to be a great at it or anything, but you know, it's to the point where, you know, if I got to choose between Cantonese with no subtitles or English dub, I'll just watch it with no subtitles and, you know, try to pick out a few sentences from what they say. But
some of them you have to, unfortunately, but there are other ones where it's like, I'll buy it, but I'm not paying more than $50 for it, you know? Something I'm only going to watch once, you know? And I found, like I was saying earlier, I think eBay is a better option. Amazon is just through the roof, unreliable. And what I find that once you buy anything from any region, sometimes they stop checking to see if it's in the right region. And you're like, I can't play that. At least not now.
Yeah, luckily for, you know, Blu-ray fans who love Hong Kong movies, they share the same region. I mean, at least here in the U.S., I should say. Mm-hmm. They share the same region with us.
Most part, yeah.
The DVDs, you know, I remember technically Hong Kong was region 3, but for the longest time, a lot of those old releases were not encoded, you know, they would just be like region 0.
You could play them on a VLC player on like a Windows computer, but that's about it. Yeah.
And where I used to live in New York State, they had Hollywood Video, and they just had so many. And that was really helped facilitate, like, when I was like really getting into the films, you know, like probably just after high school. So like 2003, 2004. And, you know, I would go on the different review sites like lovehkfilm.com or...
Those are great. Still are. Yep.
You know, just kind of writing down recommended films. And then I'd go down to Hollywood Video, and I was shocked at how many they had. I mean, they had a ton of films. And, you know, then of course I ended up buying almost everything I ever rented. But... Beast Cops, I remember that it was Anthony Wong and Michael Wong. The one where, I don't know if you saw it or not, Michael Wong's got pulls up in that Hummer.
Oh, God.
It's kind of like they call it like a cop soap opera, sort of. Like, it's kind of more about, like, these guys.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah,
but you're talking Beast Cops? Is that the one?
Yeah, Beast Cops.
That's the one. Okay, yes. That is Simon Yan and Anthony Wong, Xiao Zhang, and again, just dynamite actors. Everything. They're just phenomenal. And you know, we mentioned Maggie Cheong and some of those others who were just like the go-to. Is like they would just be so dramatically rewarding. And the guy who plays Chicken in Young and Dangerous, he's good. He's always comedic relief, but he kind of just knows how to kind of give you an idea of what's on his mind without saying anything, even though he didn't have as big a career as, say, someone who was known for stunt comedy like Stephen Chow.
Right. And I mean, one of the best actors from that generation, Tony Leung Chiu-Wai, you know, he just made the Hollywood debut in Shang-Chi.
Yes.
And I mean, when he was at the top of his game, I mean, he was such a good actor. He didn't even have to say anything, you know, like in Hard Boiled or in Hero or Infernal Affairs, whatever, right? I mean, most of the films he did, really.
Totally. And I'm just like, hey, this is the perfect compromise because finally this is a Marvel movie I can see eye to eye with. And at the same time, like, there's some good ones, but there are some stinkers that I'm just like, I don't care who says it's good. It's not that great. Unless you're a comic book fan, and it just doesn't work as a movie. But then there's the other ones. It's like, okay, if you can be as epic as, say, the Justice League extended cut, I'm down too. You know, just don't be like this DC movie or that. And, you know, it's like that one was just such a fun throwback to Hong Kong dynasty epics and mixing in, you know, Dragon Effects and some other action movie, like underground fighting and out of control vehicle tropes. And you finally get to see Michelle Yeoh and Leong doing what you wanted to see them do for quite a while, you know? And yeah, it seems like Chiang was just kind of doing kind of what Andy Lau was doing for a while. He'd just be a narc in a movie, just a throwback to his, you know, Infernal Affairs and Hard Boiled roles, and then other ones where he just shows up for a minute playing someone's uncle or, you know.
Yeah, Andy Lau, I mean, he definitely is somebody we should talk about too. I mean, that guy back in the 90s, I remember reading another book talking about how many films he would be working on at what a certain time, you know, and that supposedly he would drive from the set of one film to another film and like sleep at the stoplight or something.
Oh, God.
I don't know if that's true, but I did read that in a book. Jeez. So,
that is crazy. And
you know, he got in that, he got like trampled by a horse a few years ago in some commercial he was making and like made a full recovery. So I think we can add Andy Lau to the list of Hong Kong badasses.
Oh, totally. I found it even funnier how he was in The Great Wall and he's starring opposite Matt Damon, the guy who plays his character in the Infernal Affairs remake, The Departed.
Yeah, that was...
I made that reference ironic. And only like one out of five people got that joke. I'm like, yeah, well, you'll know it when you see it. And I like that one too, because he was working with his House of Flying Daggers director, Yang Zimao.
Yeah, The Great Wall, I mean, it was like a popcorn movie. I mean...
Totally.
It was, it's not House of Flying Daggers, but
no,
it was okay. I enjoyed it kind of, but it wasn't great, but it was nice to see Andy Lau and like,
I just found it better than so many other Hollywood movies where it's like, they'll just like, there's some people who show up and I was talking about Skyscraper earlier and it's like, there's one where it's like, you got The Rock, you got a bunch of other guys and they're just not all that used all that well. Despite there being some clever stuff near the end where they have like a, you know, Enter the Dragon hallway of mirrors and you're like, ah, but this deserves a better movie. And sometimes you see its influence, especially in, you know, the Jet Li DMX movies, but you're just like, they're just holding back a little bit. And I don't know what it is. They're just not going fully cranked all the way. It's kind of bizarre.
I think that, you know, you got Romeo Must Die, which I really like that film. I know it wasn't what some
people wanted. I gotta rewatch it. It's one of those where it's like there's some great acting moments and everything. Russell Wong is a great villain. And, you know, when it stops being Rush Hour and Shakespeare, it does kind of feel like a fun, proper tribute to Jet's earlier work. And then when they do all the CGI fighting near the end, I'm like, ugh. It does not deserve that.
It had some of the wire work was a little bit off, but I'd say that was one of his better Hollywood movies
compared to the other ones. Yeah,
Cradle to the Grave. I remember I was like looking forward to that one so much, and
I'm the same way. It's like it has less of the bullshit in the other Jet Li DMX movies by Joel Silver, but at the same time, it's just like it just when you see the stunts, they last barely a second on screen. You're like, eh, that trailer, you know, those guys figured it out. You know, that's the only eye-catching moment, and yet you got all this other stuff where it's just it's overpopulated with the plot. It's overplotted, and then it's there's not enough of what you want to see, and then yeah, it's just yeah. They needed a better crew.
You know, and I think DMX showed potential as kind of, you know, being a potential action star, but I mean, he kind of, I think he only did like one more movie after that. Like
he did a bunch of other things, but they were just like small things. And
yeah, he did like that Never Die Alone.
That was awesome. But that was more like belly as opposed to his kung fu movies. And you're like, yeah, he should. If he had gotten his drug rehab together, he could have been with a bunch of these other action guys in more movies.
Yeah, yeah, it was sad. You know, I saw on Twitter Jet Li had posted like a, you know, rest in peace kind of a tweet after DMX passed last year. So, mm-hmm. You know, he said it was nice to get to know him. And I remember DMX was the film Exit Wounds. And mm-hmm. They had brought a Hong Kong choreographer on there named Dion Lum. And I remember in one of the special features, DMX was talking about him saying, like, you know, he was like a good teacher and stuff for teaching him like the screen fighting in that film. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they did, you know, they had Corey Yoon do the other ones with Jet Li. So.
Okay.
Corey Yoon and some of those guys too, like we talked about Kirk Wong. I mean, Kirk Wong had a lot of potential and he didn't even do any more films since The Big Hit.
Yeah. Stuff that could have been thought out a little better and yet just didn't take off.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, he showed up in the movie Kung Fu Jungle, Donnie Yen.
Yeah, he's like, where you been, dude?
You know, and that's like the first I'd seen of him in years.
I think he got fisted way worse than John Woo post-Hollywood, to where he's just like, I'm just going to do TV commercials now. I had my window, and I mean, it kind of like with Kaya Saya, not, you know, this is Thailand we're talking about, but, you know, he does a fun John Woo homage movie. It's just his tribute to all kinds of blockbusters, Michael Bay, John Woo, Michael Mann, and, you know, then it's called Fa. It's worth seeing if you can find the clips on YouTube. And then, you know, does Ballistic X versus Sever, which has kind of become its own kind of cult movie despite the infamous critic rating. And now he's doing movies with Mark Dacascos, it's Dirt Cheap in Thailand, and some of them are really cool. You know, one of them was a cool zombie movie. The other was a Collateral-type hitman thriller. And
What's this guy's name?
Wick Kayasayanata. And you know him simply as Chaos. You've seen, he did one night. Okay.
I remember that Ballistic X versus Sever movie. I mean,
he did Talking To, and he was not proud of that experience, but they forced him to keep his name credit on there. But he's really made some big progress, you know, with Zero Tolerance with Justin Yin and Scott Atkins. You know, he took one of his own movies, added Scott to the cast, recut it and made a cool Taken type movie. You know, you got Justin Yin from 21 Jump Street there. So, and you know, with One Night in Bangkok and everything, I think he just keeps reminding the world Mark Dacascos has just been such a great actor who's also been just underused aside from Cradle to the Grave and Crying Freeman. I don't know why he didn't even pop up in a Hong Kong film in one chance and maybe fight Donnie Yen. That would be great.
Well, he was in that, remember that China Strike Force?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the only Hong Kong film he ever worked on. I think so. But, you know, he's, you know, every now and then he'll pop up like John Wick 3, you know, and like he played Kung Lao in that Mortal Kombat Legacy, the web series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with his pal Casper Van Dien. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Johnny Cage. Yeah. So, I mean, they were supposed to, or actually they filmed, I know this is getting off topic, but
oh, good.
They had filmed like a third season, I guess. It wasn't quite clear if it was like Legacy Season 3.
It got pre-canceled.
Yeah, they shelved it, you know. Eric Roberts was actually in it because they released some like footage that they had filmed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much of Mortal Kombat you're familiar with.
I am. I've been following the Mortal Kombat Conquest. It's Mortal Kombat Quest or something like that podcast. And they were interviewing everyone from the Conquest show to the movies. And they interviewed a guy named Fink who had done a Japanese versus Chinese, you know, movie with Steven Seagal, and he was attached to Part 3. It was going to be like a Batman Begins style reboot starring like Jessica Alba as Sonya Blade and a bunch of other cool people who were go-to action stars that were hot shit at that time. And but yeah, they interviewed Garrett Warren, who had done all the stunts and action directing on there.
Yeah,
and
he talked to us. I listened to that one. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, we'll just never be able to release it unless they, you know, give us permission to include it as like on a Blu-ray special feature or some shit. I'm like, that is bullshit. With a new movie coming out, you need to release that. And it's a shame.
Louis Tan was in the, in that third season. He played Kung Lao's. Well,
I bet he was. Guy, he was still a stuntman back then. So yeah, yeah.
Kung Jin, he's like either Kung Lao's nephew or cousin. And then Eric Roberts was actually playing this character named Bo Raicho, who's like doesn't look anything like Eric Roberts. I mean, they kind of took basically this character. I think they based his look off of Sammo Hung, like, you know, an overweight guy. And
yeah.
You know, and then they had Eric Roberts playing him. That was bizarre, but
it's what it is, man. But yeah, it's they keep changing it up, and I keep hoping, you know, they can include that as like, especially with the whole thing now on HBO Max, is like, please, guys, give us the special features. Give us that thing. Don't do the whole sit on it and then, oh, I don't want to ever release it. It's like, pretty soon, someone's going to break that contract and just show it to a private screening, you know?
Well, then we can really quickly talk about Robin Shu, who...
Yeah, he had some Hong Kong films, too. I saw the one he was in with, like, a then-unknown, like... I think he was... Yan, he's right? In so many, yeah. It's like... And Tiger Cage same thing too. With Aaron Kwok. He was in a movie with, like, Lucy Liu. It was her first movie. It was like, you got a pop music star, and then, yeah, Shu is like... How did he get discovered? How did he make the transition to America to be in Mortal Kombat, his best known role?
He was like born in Hong Kong, and then he said he, I believe he moved to California and like went to college there. Mm. Before he, I guess he went back to Hong Kong and then ended up in the movies over there.
That's like Donnie Yen and Michael Wong. He appears in New York.
Yeah. And then, I don't know how he got involved with Mortal Kombat, but I thought at the time, you know, it would make him a much bigger star than it did. I mean, not to say he wasn't a big star, but he kind of, you know, he kind of faded from the limelight. So,
yep.
So I don't know what he's up to nowadays.
Even appearing in the Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter reboot movie that was awful.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. Chun Li one, yeah. Josie Ho, you know who she is? The actress.
Really underrated. What happened to her?
I'm not sure what happened to her, but she definitely has that, you know, she can do the badass vibe quite well, like the movie Dream Home. Have you seen that one? She's playing like this, you know, young lady who
no, I haven't seen that.
She wants to buy a flat, but the housing prices are sky high. So she starts murdering people in this building to drive the prices down. It's like really, really hardcore film in terms of like what they did, you know, like what they got away with doing and stuff. I mean, really, you'd have to see it, you know.
Gotcha. Sounds wacky. I might see it.
Yeah, no, it's a cool film. And then, you know, she was...
As long as this does nothing to do with the Rachel Weisz, Daniel Craig shit fest, I'll watch it.
No. She...
That was another one. See,
she did... she didn't really get in on the action, but there's the classic film Exiled, you know, which has so many...
Yes.
Anthony Wong, Simon Young.
It was a big one, yeah. Okay, so I have seen Francis Josie Ho. I just realized she was in Open Grave with Shirley Do Copley and Thomas Crutcherman. So.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that.
I forgot she was in Contagion.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. Yeah, brief role in Contagion. And she was in that Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
Badges of Fury as the chief with Jet Li. So there you go.
That one I didn't watch that one. I thought it looked pretty bad.
It's like it has its moments, but yet it's just not remarkable because you just know they could go way more with it. But I'll take it over.
Colin Chow, I mean, he definitely had his time being a badass.
Mm-hmm.
Lao Ching-Wan.
I'm glad you brought him up because he was just so underrated as Seraph in the Matrix movies, and so I would see him in, you know, Once Upon a Time in China movies, and you know, Forbidden Kingdom, and
yeah, Flashpoint, playing the
Flashpoint. He's just great, and he doesn't get enough recognition. You're like, he deserves way, way more recognition.
Yeah, surprisingly, I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, the Donnie Yen made the film Special ID.
Yeah.
He was in that briefly, I think. Yeah, he was in that briefly, but they didn't have a fight. And I think a lot of people were disappointed, but I thought Andy On kind of stepped up, and it, you know, I mean, he doesn't have the same screen presence as Colin Chow, but
no.
You know, he made the end fight worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to top Flashpoint, but
I mean, it set the bar. It was like, here's violent Hong Kong movies and action.
Yeah, that one I had gone to Toronto to see it as well, and I mean, I just remember like people were going crazy. Like as soon as Donnie Yen came on the screen at the very beginning, where he's like just beating up some guy in the it's like in a gym or something, and people were just cheering and going nuts.
Yeah, they loved it. They really embraced it, and hadn't seen anything like that in a while.
Yeah, and then, you know, Raging Fire, of course. Have you gotten a chance to see that yet?
Pretty damn good. I mean,
yeah,
back to hard-boiled heat territory where it's like,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Benny Chan, you know, he ended his career on a high note, so.
Mm-hmm. Got this awesome movie.
Nicholas Che, by the way, I mean, I was thinking earlier, I got to bring him up, because he took time off from films and was, like, doing his whole chef thing and everything, you know, and did you ever see Invisible Target?
Yeah, that was okay for what it was. I was kind of more into City Under Siege.
Really?
The but wacky. They both, yeah, they both have their flaws in that they, yeah, they just have very goofy edits, but the ideas are interesting, so you kind of want to rewatch them anyway, even though there's just a lot of junk in them. But the fights are somewhat kind of electric, kind of dynamic.
Yeah, Invisible Target. I love that film, and The White Storm was another one Benny Chan had done.
Right, and there you're seeing Louis Koo just eat it up, just totally dominate. I mean, we talked about him earlier, how just such bullshit, how he gets kind of shunned for a bit because he had like a sex tape scandal or some shit. It's like, yeah, but you know, two consenting adults and one guy just blackmailed and videotaped them. It's like, that's bullshit. That's not anything to do with him or his talent as an actor or an action star. And yeah, he's great as the partner in Flashpoint, and then when you see him in White Storm, you're just like, man, he just is so natural just being a hard-boiled cop, and that, and Drug War, also by...
Yeah, Paradox, where he, you know, playing like that father trying to find his daughter, and just like the finale of that film. Obviously, Louis Koo is not a, you know, martial artist, but they had Sammo do the fight choreography, and I was impressed by that final scene. You know, obviously, I mean, spoiler alert for anybody who's not seen it, but Tony Jaa wasn't around for the finale, so Louis Koo had to kind of carry it, and you know, he did good with that, like, down and dirty, just like rough fighting, just, you know, not martial arts, but just throwing down, just I don't know, it was a really well done finale. And then those guys come in with like the laser sights on their guns and stuff.
Oh, it's great. Yeah,
that was cool.
Sometimes just the simplest edits are just what make the movie too. That's the other ironic part. We get all these heavily promoted fighting and gunplay, and it's like, yeah, but these guys are just like veterans of the industry, so there's a lot more nostalgia to this.
You want to talk a minute about like some of the other female stars? Like back in the 80s, it was like so many of them, like you know, Moon Lee. I mean, I don't really think of Moon Lee. You don't really think of her as like a so-called badass, but I mean,
she would definitely kind of do, but she's just not on my radar. Like Cynthia Khan, I think, just had more leading into it, just doing all those In the Line of Duty movies, you know, following the success of Michelle Yeoh's Yes, Madam, and having to be her own thing, coming into the fold, playing against all the other types. Yeah.
And Cynthia Rothrock, I mean, I think she got her start in Hong Kong movies. I don't know if she'd ever done anything before Yes, Madam. And then from what I understand, Sophia
Crawford, who doubled, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar, same kind of deal, just British person working on these international productions for a Hong Kong stunt team, you know?
Yeah, Yukari Oshima, you know, she was like, she definitely fit the bill of being a badass. So, let's see. Well, you know, Sammo Hung's wife, Joyce Gudenzi, she got to do a couple films. Yeah, she did a film called She Shoots Straight.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
That's her in the lead role. Yeah, she, you know, she doesn't look like it, and, you know, she doesn't have like a tough look, but she definitely held her own in the action. So, yeah, she was able to come across as believable. I don't know what her background is in terms of whether she had any training or what, but.
Well, I mean, they all pretty much are one giant family. It's like they're, you know, conquering just so many video store shelves and theaters doing these kinds of movies. And obviously, you know, Cy Hark's The Deadly Trio was a good one for both Jiang and Michelle Yeoh. And and I mean, it seems like we just need a little more of that. And I think my one issue with Louis Koo and some of those other guys who I like otherwise is that even Anthony Chow Wan Sang, unfortunately, recently, they've been in a lot of movies that are confusing because, like, they're compilations of various TV shows in China, and they're editing into like a season into like a 2-hour movie. You're like, yeah, that's just not going to work. That rarely does.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. I don't bother with it. I mean, I know,
I give them like 10 minutes, and then after all, you're like, yeah, I can't even rank this really even as a movie because it just doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't know anything about what's going on.
I think it's unfair to the production to do that. You know, it's kind of false advertising. Like, I didn't ever bother to watch it, but like Donnie Yen had that Fist of Fury TV series in the 90s.
Yeah.
I think
Benny Chan did
some of that with him. And they, yeah. they released it as a so-called movie, but it was just some episodes edited together or something. So yeah. Again, I didn't see it, but once I found out it wasn't a real movie, but
just, I saw clips and it was just like, yeah, this doesn't work if you don't know what's going on. So yeah, hopefully it'll get better, but you just don't know. Yep.
Well, unfortunately, I think with everything going on, and obviously they've been proclaiming the death of Hong Kong cinema for quite a while now, and it keeps going to a certain extent, but lately it's had me worried with everything going on, like the film censorship laws that China has gotten to pass in Hong Kong, and of course the whole COVID pandemic has not done it any favors, but
no,
you know, that's why I told everybody, like, Raging Fire, it felt like the end of an era. Mm-hmm. But hopefully we can still get some other cool films, you know, as time goes on.
We'll get it. It just won't be instantaneous. And I mean, Raging Fire is a good example that it's still alive. It's just, it's in waves, you know. It's not instantaneous like we would like it, you know, especially when you get to the late 90s where you're like, whoa, awesome.
Yeah, instead of a dozen movies or more per year that you want to check out, you know, there might be, what, one or two nowadays, but
then by the time you're caught up, it's already been overhyped and you're like, ah, it wasn't anything to write home about. What are you talking about?
Well, at least it saves us money.
Right. Totally.
I mean, nowadays, like you said, like checking on Amazon or eBay, I mean, a lot of those prices are really jacked up.
It's our podcast now, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, they're bad. So yeah, I recommend eBay. Don't VHS fall on the Amazon strap. VHS tapes, if you got to do online, some channels like Rare Lust are pretty good. Getting their shit figured out.
Yeah, I mean, they're selling like old Tai Seng VHS tapes for like, there's some seller on Amazon. They got almost every Hong Kong movie that had a Tai Seng VHS release, and they're all between like $80 and $120 or something.
Mm-hmm. And well, I saw one going for like $200 to $1,000. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not worth that much ever anywhere. I guarantee you, I could go to Chinatown in like San Francisco where I got family, and I could probably I could probably buy out an entire shelf of Tai Seng used DVDs or something like that. And it's gotta be there somewhere.
Yeah, most everything I've pretty much bought online, except I did search a couple Chinatown shops years ago, like in New York and Chicago, but I never found any movies to buy. But I didn't spend much time looking. But I do remember one place in Chicago Chinatown. They had some cool stuff. Like they had like an Andy Lau poster, and then they had a poster of First Strike.
Nice.
Jackie Chan. You know, it was like, I think it was the poster where he's shown with that little, it's like a tracking gun he like used to fire the little tracking device on, but then it has like the sharks and the guys on the skis and everything with the snowy mountains in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's another film that, hey, a lot of negative reviews, but I think that's a really cool film.
Totally. It's got moments, you know, and every movie has its moments, and you're going to check them all out regardless of their quality anyway. So, I mean, I would always get the whole, oh, don't waste time on it. And it was like, and I mean, I bought out so many of these that were rare and hard to find titles, and I had no issue with it. There was only like maybe one that I was disappointed with, and it's because someone put in the wrong disc, and then there was like maybe one other one. And it was just one of those just false advertising giant ensemble, just wrong sauce, didn't work. But it's going to happen eventually. So, you know, just, for the most part, I've been pretty impressed with what eBay had. And because I keep trying Yes Asia, and you're just like, yeah, no, it's continually out of stock. What have I got to do to let them know? Find me a copy. I will pay, you know, $50. But
yeah, you know, another good a good method is if you go to HKMDB.com and
or you could, movie database.
Yeah, or you could find it elsewhere too. You can just copy and paste like the Chinese title of the films and then you know, throw it on Google, and sometimes you can find those on like Hong Kong auction sites, and a lot of them have, you know, bilingual options, so you can message people and say, hey, you know, do you ship overseas, this and that. Sometimes if they're out of print, you know, the prices might get a little bit ridiculous, especially for like a VCD format or something. But you know, it all depends on what it's worth to you. I mean, like I've a couple times I've spent more money than I'd like to admit on just one single movie, but well, my wife won't let me do that anymore.
Oh dear. It is hard to justify it after a while, and I've had to even tell other people before. There's many moments where you're just like, hey, what happens, happens.
Yeah. But, I mean, so actually it was, here's somebody we didn't talk about, is Yun Biao.
Yeah, I talked about him in the last one, but yeah, he is a mastermind, and it's just criminal. And so I'd like to know your theories. Why do you think he had a huge career, but just wasn't as big a name as, say, even the character actors like
I think
Simon Yen.
Well, I think you got Jackie, you got Sammo, and you got Yun Biao, and then I think, you know, I think a lot of people viewed him as like, you know, third tier, number three of that group. Jackie obviously was the most popular. Sammo Hung
just won over after a while.
But I mean, Yun Biao, I think he was probably the most acrobatic of all three of them. And I don't know, maybe if, I don't know if it was like his look or what, but I think he had a great career in Hong Kong, but he just didn't really move beyond, like, you know, if you ask the average person on the street, like, they're not going
to never have heard of Michelle Yeoh.
You know, unfortunately, I don't think here in the United States, I don't think even the average person's heard of Sammo Hung, which I think is a shame, but at least Jackie Chan's a household name, so.
Right. That's good. It's very good.
But Yun Biao, let's see, yeah, Righting Wrongs was the movie, and he did it with Cynthia Rothrock. That's a film that I spent quite a bit of money on to get the old DVD, like it was a Universe Laser. It had like a dual side, Cantonese version on one side and Mandarin on the other, which I'd never seen that before. You know, it's like a different cut of the film.
That's wild.
And then within like a short time period, they like re-released it with, you know, the digitally remastered version for like $15. I was like, yeah, I should have been more patient, but
right,
oh well, that was off eBay, so I just gotta,
yeah, what you paid for.
Yeah, stick with what I paid for already and, you know, learn my lesson next time. Don't spend too much. Who else can we talk about? Unfortunately, you know, I got to say, too, I mean, no offense to the younger guys out there, but let's be honest. For many decades, Hong Kong had such a vast talent pool. And maybe it's just because, I don't know what it is, but they don't seem like they have people left anymore who can kind of carry on the legacy, so to speak. You know, once...
It's a tough deal, it seems like.
Once all these guys, and a lot of them already did retire, but, you know, a lot of them are getting older. It's like, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be the same.
No. Different market.
Yeah.
I mean, we were having that struggle with our regular American action stars, too. It was like, okay, who's going to carry the torch? Because the ones we like aren't being well used. The ones that are being overused are kind of making us dislike them even more.
Yeah, and it's probably something to do, too, with nostalgia and the era you grew up in. But, I mean, still, for action films, it's like, you know.
Investors doing too much of the talking instead of, no, let's get this guy.
There's never going to be another Schwarzenegger and Stallone and, you know, Van Damme and just all those guys at once that you know, really help just push the genre into overdrive.
Right.
Yes. And the other unfortunate thing is, too, I mean, back in those days, we got practical effects pretty much 100% of the time. Nowadays, I understand, you know, they want to, safety is a big thing, so I don't blame anybody for using CGI if they want to be safe, but it just doesn't have the same impact on screen, you know, as practical effects. So.
Not going to for a while. It's just, you need someone who can really just channel it and make sure that, again, we accept what's on screen versus that's just all we can afford. Sorry, you know.
Yeah, and the guys, you know, I got to credit, you know, it's not just Hong Kong cinema, but they definitely were kind of the top of the heap of proving you can make fantastic action films for pretty low budget. You know, back in, like, I think Hard Boiled had $4 million budget in 92.
Mm-hmm.
Which still, I'm sure that was a lot less than, I mean,
that's really all it's coming down to. It's just like, they want to make it fast. They want to have a respectable budget, but I even miss the 90s when they did the whole, like, film it for $10,000. Now it seems like, unless it's made for $2 million, is as low as you can go. And I'm like, that's such bullshit. Because you see people who are the cast of a TV show get together and they'll crowdfund a movie and pitch in, you know, like each like $5,000 each, and then, you know, star and shoot it and win some awards, or it gets some fanfare from their base. And there are so many exceptions to every rule. And I'm still seeing people mock how people can film something with a phone. It's like, well, if you know how to frame it, you can totally do a great job with that. You just need to hire a sound guy and do some color correcting and other stuff. But don't just, you know, complain and then act like, oh, you know, our restrictions and everything. It's like, no, it's something more to this.
You know, what, 10 years ago, Gareth Evans kind of reminded me of John Woo in the sense of, like, you know, here's Hard Boiled 20 years earlier that was made for, what, I think $4 million. And then Gareth Evans did The Raid for like $2 million or something. You know, really by like the standards of Hollywood, I mean, the budget was tiny. But yeah,
Jesse V. Johnson and Isaac Florentine, I think, are going to keep doing, they're going to get back to doing some international stuff like they first were doing. Now that they've been comfortable helping out people like William Kaufman and other people doing low-budget B-action movies. I can't get into the Raid type movies, but I like the whole focus of it, which is do all these Die Hard, Assault on Precinct 13 type movies, and then the rest of it is people fight each other to the death. I mean, Triple Threat did that, I thought, pretty well.
Yeah, I like Triple Threat a lot. I think, like you said, Jesse V. Johnson, I believe he's Vic Armstrong's nephew.
Something like that.
Vic Armstrong,
who got him in the door.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, I mean, if you look at his, like, credits on IMDb, I mean, he's he's done so many phenomenal action choreography, you know, action stunt coordination and stuff. And the movie Joshua Tree with Dolph Lundgren.
Yes.
That's got the best John Woo shootout that John Woo didn't do. So.
Unfortunately, Vic seems to be back doing second unit stuff, but I'm glad he's still active. I mean, Mechanic Resurrection has a great finale on a boat. And he, unfortunately, you know, the John Wick guys are popularizing the whole, hey, give a, you know, martial artist or action guy a chance behind the camera. So I'm glad that they're popularizing that and doing their own thing. That's just a great homage to, and as well as its own special cool world. I like how with the Equalizer, Antoine Fuqua is still taking a lot of beloved, you know, badass actors and action stars and kind of doing, you know, what he does best, just more of the same tough and gritty, you know, Walter Hill type movies. You know, just this, everything is a Western, and at the end of the day, someone's going to just kick some ass and clean shop, you know. But
yeah, I mean, a lot
we
of
had
those...
other greats that we've lost, like Tony Scott. I'm like,
Yeah, I was just thinking about him the other day. Like,
Michael Bay took a while to stop doing the Transformers stuff and come back and do regular over the top.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm looking forward to that Ambulance movie.
Right? But wouldn't you like to... Is it in theaters or video?
I think it's coming out in the theater next month.
Good. Because it seemed for a while, and like he was doing streaming-only movies. I'm like, no, I don't want him to... I want to see that in a theater. You know?
I mean, yeah, Michael Bay gets a lot of shit, and I understand. But hey...
It's Michael Bay.
He made The Rock, which... I
got the Criterion Collection release. So
yeah, there you go. So
so did Armageddon. So Bad Boys, I'll be honest, I watch them anytime they're on TV, and I have fun. Are they on the level as Lethal Weapon or Die Hard? But no, but that's okay.
Right. Yeah,
I'll take it over any other lazy movie with Dean Devlin or Brett Ratner that's just lazy. And it's like that, those, he's just unapologetic over the top, and I'm sorry, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many filmmakers that they really just with one or two films, you just know, okay, you know, these guys really know how to do action films. I mean, there's just far too many people to name, but like you said, Antoine Fuqua, and then obviously he did Replacement Killers.
Yes, and that was, I think he learned quickly from the John Woo school and was like, hey, you know, whatever he loved, you know, he already was a Kurosawa guy, so it was like, yeah, just do the whole code of honor and, you know, characters fighting for what they believe in, you know. He does natural drama and action that audiences respond to. It's like, that's something.
Yeah, like Training Day. I mean, that's
a cool
film, you know.
And I mean, I think that even goes back to Heat in Collateral. Michael Mann is totally doing, making references to Hong Kong cinema and those. And yeah, same kind of deal there. He was very influenced by Sidney Lumet kind of hard-boiled crime thrillers and then mixing in, you know, when you get David Ayer and other people scripting your movies, obviously you get some, you know, High Noon and just other Lethal Weapon type of moments. And it's just not easy for everyone. It seems like some of these guys, they got to envision it or work with certain people. And I just say, keep trying to evolve whatever way you can, you know.
Yeah, I mean, those cop films that, like, like End of Life.
I lost you there for a sec.
Oh, sorry. End of Watch.
Yeah, yeah. We talked all about David Ayer's movies and how he is just in your face. And I see many people talking shit about him. Like, I have no issue with Street Kings or SWAT or even his more recent ones. Like, The Tax Collector, I thought was cool. He even includes a few characters from Training Day in there. And he's just really good at kind of, I feel like everyone has to be compared all the time nowadays. And it's just like, they're similar, but they're their own oyster. I'm not going to compare Tarantino to Jim Jarmusch or Luc Besson to, I don't know, Howard Hawks. You know, I just, they're all different, but very similar. I mean, overall, everyone's telling the same story over time. So,
you mentioned several, like, American filmmakers that really specialize in those, like, kind of street level crime films, like
Scorsese. Yeah, and the noir looking cities, and some of them are kind of imitating Scorsese at other times. Is like, no, he's not even touching this,
you know. Dante Lum, who, you know, you probably know him from
one of the best, yep,
one, you know, some of his action blockbusters, which, I mean, there's no denying that he and Benny Chan were, you know, kind of the top two in any time, but recent times that were able to do these, like, really large scale, big budget, kind of epic blockbusters. And, you know, Dante did more of kind of like a military, you know,
he's done so many of them that
said in interviews, like, he was really into, like, police tactics and weaponry and military hardware and all that stuff. Yep. So
he works with Gordon Chan quite a lot too.
Yeah. And of course, Johnny Doe, who I don't know if he's, like, retired now or what, but
seem to recall there was, like, a rumor he had died, but I had just gotten it mixed up with Ringo Lum.
Ringo Lum passed away, and,
like,
you know,
a heart attack, like, freak accident. You're like, no.
Benny Chan, few other folks, but Johnny Doe, I'm not quite sure what he's up to nowadays, but I think, you know, for the gunplay, he really kind of took over from when John Woo went to Hollywood, and really, I mean, he made his own kind of style, but it definitely had, like,
he goes back to, like, the spaghetti western and assassins, as opposed to, yeah, like, Woo, you know, you're never going to be able to replicate the whole, you know, jumping in the air with two pistols in both hands, you know. It's like, he's doing the whole more just everyone just schemes and plans, and the quiet moments are just as important as, you know, the violent moments. And I mean, Vengeance from 2009 is just great, great, great movie. It's just,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. You are inspired to just keep watching what's happening on screen, you know.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Those films, like, you know, he was one of a few directors that was really able to make a shootout, you know, look like a artwork or something, you know. Vengeance.
You ever Running Out of Time?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen, I was a huge, huge fan of the whole Milky Way Image company that he had going.
So good on those. Yeah.
So I saw almost every film they made in that company, with just a few exceptions. Running Out of Time, yeah. That one was, I like it. I don't love it, but I enjoyed it. I mean, I think a lot of people liked it a little bit better than I did, but I still enjoy it. You know, it was kind of a, I don't know. It wasn't a bad film, but it's not one of my favorites of him. I like The Mission a lot better.
I couldn't get into The Mission, but I do. No. It's just so slow, but it's a good premise. I love the whole setup and everything. And more or less what he understands is just motivation, and that gets you interested in the whole, just as opposed to just feeling like it's mindless, you know, fluff.
Yeah, a lot of his films had like a certain quirkiness to them, and just like, you know, if you look at Woo's shootouts that have all this movement, compared to like the mall shootout in Mission, where it's like, it's very still, like everybody's like standing almost still in one spot, but it's like, it still has this, I don't know, some kinetic energy to it.
Very atmospheric, yeah.
But then he did kind of, I think Full Time Killer was the first one I saw from him.
That was wacky. That was one of those, is like, the script doesn't work, but you just gotta watch the batshit crazy action and the premise. So it's just, yeah. This guy who's a vigilante at night and the other hitman is just trying to stay clear of it. And of course they're in with the same woman. So it's like, wow, this is nutty.
Yeah, no, that's a cool film. PTU, even though it's slow, but it's like,
I can't do the PTU movies.
It has such an atmosphere to it, you know. It's like
the atmosphere is good. He carries it in the rest of his movies. Like, they're always there. And it's tough to describe, because like Ringo Lam kind of does more of the whole tot, just people looking into something they shouldn't be seeing, and John Woo does the whole, you know, quiet moments followed by outbursts of loud, you know, surprises, and he does more kind of just like follow around, track around, and then just stop. And as soon as someone has said something important, you know, you see people in a room. Like, the election movies are pretty good with Simon Yam as a gangster. They kind of work in some dark comedy. And
yeah, was that by him? There was definitely that sense of humor and like almost like a playfulness at times. At times, it makes me think of like, not a whole lot, but a tiny bit of like Takeshi Kitano's work, like
especially when you get to Mad Detective and Exiled, and it's like, man, these are breaking like, news is even more bad shit. You're like, wow, I'm seeing a violent robbery unfold.
Yeah, let's see. A Hero Never Dies. I mean, that one's so cool. I mean, even though the ending is like, you know, just crazy, right? But did you see that one where it's got Lau Ching Wan? He's like in the wheelchair, and you know, I don't know if how you do spoilers, really. I mean, I won't say anything about it.
Actually not seen this one. It's been on my to watch list, so check it out.
Yeah, but I don't know if you'd like it. If you liked Full Time Killer, I think you might enjoy it. I mean, that was probably the second Johnny Toe film I saw back in the day, like after I rented Full Time Killer. Then I loved it so much. I was like, I got to see everything this guy's made, you know? I think A Hero Never Dies.
Night and Expect the Unexpected and even Beast Cops. I mean, those all kind of flow together after a while. It's like Mad Detective. It's like, they're all movies that are interesting in that basically they just get to be experimental.
Yeah, Mad Detective was really cool. Blind Detective was a little different, but it was okay. It was kind of like he mixed his romantic comedies with his crime films. And then like the guy that used to do a lot of the films with him, Wai Ka Fai, he's got actually another film coming out called Detective versus Sleuths or something like that.
It actually looks kind of good.
Like, I just saw the trailer a few days ago. I was like, okay, I'm probably going to have to check it out. The title's kind of off, but originally they were going to call it Cold Detective, to kind of make it sound like, you know, Mad Detective or whatever. And you got Lau Ching Wan in there again, like presumably playing like a crazy person or something. But
Oh boy. Wild.
Let's see here. Nick Chung, I mean, I think he got his start in comedy and he was able to really, you know, transition over to being a serious actor and an award-winning actor too. I mean, like The Beast Stalker and Unbeatable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he looked pretty badass and Unbeatable. I was surprised, you know, like, you know, usually he's just a skinny guy. All of a sudden he's like in Unbeatable. I guess it was all real. Like, I think he really like got in shape for the role.
Yeah. He's in a lot of those Infernal Affairs type movies where he just shows up and it was another one where you're like, hey, he needs more work.
There was a film called Helios that came out a few years back. And
I think I saw the trailer. I didn't see the movie.
It was about like this small nuclear device and stuff. They had like a big international cast, like Hong Kong actors.
Yeah, that's the one. Russell Wong, I think, was in it, if I'm not mistaken.
It had, I was going to talk about, her name is Janice Munn. She's, you know, just this unassuming, very skinny, you know, young actress, right? And she, they really made her a badass in that film. Like, she was like,
oh yeah,
some kind of okay, a killer.
So I have not seen this one yet because there's I was getting them over mixed up with a bunch of the movies that were kind of takeoffs on Cold War and what's the other one, Shockwave, and just like,
oh, yeah,
they were doing takes on that. But yeah, it's like there was Line Walker and it was followed by a bunch of other ones. It's like they're all trying to be like White Storm, S Storm, Z Storm, P Storm. Those were pretty dumb.
It's, yeah,
because like, they're trying to be just like all these other awesome top movies, and it's like, but they don't deliver on any action or the cast. But yeah, Helios, I did hear good stuff about because it was just every doomsday device you could think of.
That had really good action in it. I mean, you can't say like, oh, it's a great film or whatever, but the action.
Well, the guys definitely did Cold War, so I'll take a chance on it versus the other guys who are just like, whoa, what? Yeah, just there's these are again. You're back to the TV shows where it's, you know.
Yeah, that whole series you were talking about, I didn't even see any of those. Like, it started with Z Storm, and then
yeah, you're mistaking it for White Storm. You're like, no, don't you dare mix it up with White Storm.
Well, when I first heard about that first one, I misread the article. I thought they said it was going to be Dante Lum. Turned out to be David Lum.
Yeah.
And David Lum is, no offense to him, but he's not Dante Lum. So,
yeah.
And then once the reviews came out and then, you know, they just kept making them, it was like, eh. I thought about checking out the last one, G Storm, but
yeah.
I thought, then I might have to go buy all the other ones. So,
they don't have any relation to each other. That's where you feel really pissed off. You're like, ah, oh, you bastards, you made me waste all this money.
Yeah, Louis Koo, I mean, he was like in like almost every movie, you know, for a while, like
just about everyone. Yeah, and I can't blame him for wanting a payday, but it's just one of those, like, if you didn't have the internet, I don't know how I would watch half these movies, because it's like some of them you're gonna go the full ounce and buy the Blu-ray, and there's others just like, yeah, I'll just wait for streaming. Or
yeah, I mean, if it weren't for the internet, I mean, unfortunately, you know, you'd have to rely on like word of mouth and stuff, and younger kids can watch those at least. And if he doesn't like them, right, I don't want to force it on him, but of course I'm hoping,
yeah,
please like them, you know.
Please don't reject. Please like. But yeah. Oh, man.
Well, he's got my DNA in him, so I think he'll probably like him.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.